got my bags packed, I'm on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 629. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and waterfalls and caves, active volcanoes, lava tubes, and at least one unpronounceable National Historic Site as we go to the Big Island of Hawaii. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about the Big Island. I'd like to welcome to the show Justin Barnes from justinandcrystal.com, who's come to talk to us about the Big Island of Hawaii. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And do you call it the Big Island or you call it Hawaii? Because there's some confusion when one talks about Hawaii, which is both a state and an island.
It's confusing in multiple regards, because not only that, half the people that I tell when I tell them I live on the Big Island, they assume I'm referring to Oahu because that's the most populated island.
But it's 90% of the population of Hawaii, but not the biggest island by far.
No, in fact, the region of the Big Island that I live in, Puna, which is just 1/9, give or take, of the Big Island, is actually bigger than the entire island of Oahu, but it has only maybe tens of thousands of people, and that's it.
Yeah, no freeways on the Big Island of Hawaii. No real need for them.
No. There's a couple main roads, one that goes around the north, the 19, one that goes around the south, the 11, and if you were to drive all the way around the island, it would take you, give or take, 5 hours. So it is a very, very big island.
Excellent. Well, why should someone go to Hawaii, the Big Island?
Well, one thing that's unique about the Big Island is that it has more diversity in one small place than about anywhere else on this planet. I don't think people appreciate how tall the two mountains that dominate the interior of the island are. They're almost 14,000 feet. And so you can have snow and sand on the same day just by driving up and back down the mountain. And so basically any type of climate that you want to see, whether it be rainforest or desert or moonscape or everything in between, can all be found on one island and all in a somewhat short drive.
Well, and when you say they're 14,000 feet, they're 14,000 feet above sea level, above the sea, but they extend down to the floor of the ocean. I believe at Mauna Loa or Mauna Kea, I don't remember which one's bigger, is the biggest mountain in the world by mass.
Yes, that's Mauna Loa. And I think the ocean there is over 20,000 feet deep, and they don't know exactly how much the sea floor has been pushed down by Mauna Loa. It could be that the weight of it has actually pushed down the sea floor 10,000 feet. It is by mass the biggest mountain on the planet.
Cool. And what kind of itinerary do you recommend?
Well, given the size of the island and the fact there's no quote-unquote central location, what generally I think would be good for people is to spend part of the time on the west side, the Kailua Kona area, and the other part on the east side, the Hilo area. And then maybe, depending on what is of most interest to you, maybe spending some time in the Waimea area or the volcano area, but both of those are relatively straightforward day trips if you'd rather just stick to two hotel locations.
Okay. Well, let's get started. Where are you going to start us out?
So I was planning on starting in Hilo and then kind of going around clockwise from Hilo all the way around the island.
Got it. Okay. I've done that trip.
Yes.
Well, I should say that for those of you who are long-time listeners of the show, and you'd really have to be a very long-time listener of the show, we have done an episode on the Big Island, but I think it's been 12 years. So it was about time to update it. For one thing, there's more of the Big Island than there used to be 12 years ago. It is literally changing as we speak because it is the site of an active volcano.
Yes, it actually went off in my neighborhood a couple months ago. I live about 8 blocks from where the volcano was erupting, and the coastline got pushed out several hundred yards in some places, and unfortunately, over 700 homes were lost over this summer. So it is one of those places where land is being made and destroyed in real time, and you can see it before your eyes.
8 blocks.
Yes, it was. It's been an interesting couple of months. I'll leave it at that.
Wow. Okay. Well, this last eruption has been much closer to Hilo than the previous ones, or at least for a long time in terms of where it's coming out. I didn't realize it was that close. I mean, I knew there'd been houses lost, so I guess I should have figured that out. But wow. Okay.
Yeah, it actually started in the middle of my neighborhood and then kind of fanned out going downhill towards the ocean. And about a third of my neighborhood was destroyed, and multiple neighborhoods in the Kapoho area, where there used to be some really lovely tide pools, plus a really nice coastline. All that, unfortunately, is gone now as of late May, early June 2018.
Wow. Okay. So we're starting a vacation there. let's talk about safety first. There's a reason why you're not running away from the island as fast as you can, or flying or taking a boat away, that there's some reason to believe that you are relatively safe there and that we should come.
Yes. And to be clear, as of August of 2018, the eruption has stopped. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, one of the reasons that I thought it might be a good time to pitch the show is because over the summer, so many people understandably stopped visiting the island. But now that the eruption has stopped, the gases from that have stopped. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a VOG, which was basically all the particles from the volcano that would come right. out, would get blown by the wind over to the west side of the island, where most of the tourist resorts are. And there mm-hmm. would be this constant haze. And now that's all gone. There's clear skies, nice sunsets. So for the first time in probably 35 years, there hasn't been any active lava on the surface for a couple months now.
Okay. So we're starting on the Hilo side. We're flying into the Hilo airport then, theoretically.
Yes. And just to be clear, there's two major airports on the island, one in Hilo, which if you're looking at a clock would be at about 3 o'clock, and then one in Kona, which is at 9 o'clock. And generally there's more flights into Kona, mm-hmm. but I would say if you're coming to visit and you have your choice of airports, just do some searching to see which one's less expensive and choose that one. Because if you're just going around the island anyway, there's really no point to necessarily starting on one side or the other. There's no reason to pick one or the other to start and the other to finish.
Well, in terms of the different sides of the island, the east and the west side of the island are quite different culturally, I would say. How would you describe the two?
I would say that the west side is more of a vibe that I think people would be more used to from, let's say, the West Coast of the United States, like your San Diego, Los Angeles. There are quite a few transplants. You'll see a Costco, you'll see a Walmart, you'll see a Target, and then you'll see all these nice resorts mm-hmm. right on the ocean. The East side is more of a, what I'll say, an authentic vibe, probably much more similar to what you would have seen 50 years ago in Hawaii. In fact, Hilo itself hasn't changed a whole lot over the last 50 years. The people there are quite happy about that. You're much more likely to run into people whose family has been there for a long time, who are of Hawaiian descent on the east side, than you are on the west. And the other big difference between the east and the west is the east side is much wetter because the mm-hmm. storms all come from the east. The prevailing winds are from the east. And as they go up over the mountains, they drop the rain on the east side of Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa. So Hilo, for example, is one of the wettest cities in the country, averaging anywhere between 120 and 180 inches of rain every year, whereas Kona may get one-tenth of that. Hmm.
I knew it was a lot more. I didn't realize it was that much, though. But it's a very tropical environment. I remember having a hotel where there was bananas growing right outside our door, fresh picked fruits and things like that. Yeah, more Hawaiian would be the way I would say that. Excellent. And what are we going to see while we're in Hilo?
So the first thing I would recommend is actually just north of Hilo in the Onomea Bay area, and it's called Hilo Tropical Botanic Garden. And mm-hmm. this is a garden that's several acres large and is on a hillside and leads down to a nice bay at the bottom. And the garden is full of tropical plants from all over the world, including many things that just look like they're on steroids, huge flowers, huge palm trees, bright colored flowering trees and heliconias and gingers, and everything that you think of with a tropical botanic garden is all here. And it's always a highlight with anyone that comes out to visit.
Well, and one of the things that always struck me as strange is so many of the things I know as houseplants are native tropical plants like philodendrons and things like that, but they're huge.
Yes, when you see them climbing 50 feet up a tree, that you get a new appreciation for that tiny thing that you have in the corner of your living room.
It doesn't seem to thrive quite as well in the corner of my living room either.
So another couple of things that I would recommend near Hilo are two different falls. There's mm-hmm. quite a few waterfalls on the east side, and one is just above Hilo. It's called Rainbow Falls. And then there's another one a little further afield, maybe about 5, 10, 15 minutes north of Hilo, called Akaka Falls. And mm-hmm. both of those are nice falls with lookout points where you can just park your car, take a look, and then go on about your day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area.
Yeah, another site is also in Hilo, right sort of near downtown Hilo, is an area called Banyan Drive and mm-hmm. Coconut Island that are right next to one another, just east of the main downtown drag. And the Banyan Drive is called Banyan Drive because there's a number of massive ficus trees that are referred to as banyan trees that were planted close to 100 years ago now. And they line both sides of this road that has some of the hotels in Hilo. And it's really amazing seeing these huge trees. And also over by Coconut Island, there's some very nice views back towards downtown Hilo. And then also on a clear day, you can see Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa from there. And frankly, on a clear day, that's one of the best views on the entire island. Granted, those days are few and far between, but when they happen, they're really outstanding.
And when you were over by Rainbow Falls, isn't that also the area where there's one of the lava tubes that you can go into? Or is that a little further out?
There may be. There's lava tubes, frankly, all over the eastern part of the island. I'm not familiar with the one near Rainbow Falls, but there very well could be one there.
I think I'm thinking of the Kaumana Caves. So it's a little further up the same road.
That is the Kaumana area, yes.
Well, and when we say a lava tube, first of all, this is something that doesn't have lava in it, which would be important to point out. But what are we talking about when we talk about hiking in a lava tube?
When the lava comes down the hillside, oftentimes it will crust over on the top mm-hmm. and then be flowing in a insulated area just underneath the ground and going downhill towards the ocean. And then wherever it stops, when it does stop and everything dries, lots of times what's left behind is the tube that the lava was flowing in. And sometimes those tubes are big enough that you could drive a bus through them. And so several of them, including some well-known ones in the national park, mm-hmm. You can hike in with a flashlight and just get an idea of the scale and the magnitude of how big these tubes were.
Well, and when you said that there was no flow, the term you used was there was no surface flow, because there's quite often things going on under the surface in the Big Island. It is a volcanically active area, and this is one of the ways it happens, right, is that they're flowing lava, sometimes flowing in lava tubes. Surface flow, when it's not in your neighborhood, when it's someplace that you can go and see safely, is spectacular. When it's in your neighborhood, it's spectacular and, I imagine, terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, that's actually the exact description I was using, which was it's the most awesome thing I've ever seen, and I wish it would stop today.
Yeah. Okay, where are we going to go next?
I'll describe Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa here, because going around the circle, those are the two items that don't fit in the circle. They're the middle of the circle, and mm-hmm. they're each over 13,600 feet high. Mauna Kea has not erupted in quite some time, millennia, and Mauna Loa has not erupted since 1984. But what's interesting about both of those is that you can hike on both of them, and we did those hikes a couple years ago, and the views from up there are spectacular. And the terrain is really fascinating as well, particularly on Mauna Loa, because it is an active volcano. You can see lava from various flows and the various colors that the lava is. It's not always black, depending on what sort of minerals were in that particular flow. You can have flows that are red, which is fairly common, but then also more exotic colors like blue or green. And on the hike going up from the Mauna Loa Observatory, we saw a whole kaleidoscope of different colors of different lava flows. It's a really lovely hike, and I would recommend people, particularly people that are in better shape and don't have any aversion to altitude sickness, to put aside a day or two to do one or both of those hikes.
And then you mentioned from the observatory, Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea both have observatories at the top?
Mauna Kea has observatories at the very top, which are famous observatories for astronomy. Mm-hmm. There's also a visitor center on Mauna Kea about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way up that you can stop and look from there. It's not advised to drive above there, but you can take a tour that will go all the way to the top. But just people driving their own rental cars should stop at the visitor center. Mauna Loa has a weather observatory about 11,000 feet up, but nothing above that unless you walk. And it makes sense that the active volcano wouldn't have any expensive observatories at the very top.
That does make sense. Okay, great. Thanks for clarifying that.
So one other thing to do on Mauna Kea that I alluded to a minute ago is you can take stargazing tours where from either Hilo or from Kona, you can get on a bus with usually about 8 to 10 other people, and they will drive you up to the top of Mauna Kea right before sunset, and you get these amazing views from the top. And then after the sun goes down, there's some stargazing. I think they generally have some tea or coffee or hot chocolate. And then after some stargazing, they will drive you back down to the mountain and back to your hotel. And that's really something special to do. And again, you can do that from either side. It's a little closer from the Hilo side, but you could do that if you were staying on the Kona side and as a day trip from Kona as well.
Well, and the one thing we should say, so Hilo, you said 120 inches of rain a year, so quite often cloudy skies, but the mountains are usually above the clouds, as I recall. And so you've got a pretty good chance that you're going to see stars when you go up there.
Yes. Generally, the clearest time of day is in the morning off both the peaks. And those hikes that I mentioned a minute ago, I would definitely recommend leaving for those as early in the morning as possible and hoping to finish around noon or 1 p.m. So that you're not stuck up there in a rainstorm. But yeah, at sunset, generally, there's an inversion layer and the clouds are beneath you, maybe about 9,000-10,000 feet. And so you have this amazing view over the clouds, and the west side of the island generally has fewer clouds. So even if you're looking back towards Hilo and there's clouds, if you're looking towards Kona, it can be clear from all the way down the mountain to the ocean.
Okay. Well, and the other thing you can do from Hilo that I would like to recommend, even though I got a little airsick doing it, was a helicopter tour, especially if you happen to be there during some time when the volcanic activity is appropriate, because we went off and did a helicopter tour when the Pu'u'o'o vent was still erupting down in Volcanoes National Park. And you can watch, for instance, as the lava hits the ocean, it forming a black sand beach. And I always thought that was an erosion process rather than explosion process. But when very hot lava hits cold seawater or relatively cold seawater, it is spectacular in terms of the pyroclastic nature of it. It really just kind of explodes in this big plume of steam going up from the coast there.
I've seen that up close. There's lava boats that are really, can get you quite close. That the views from that are just outstanding. I was going to recommend a helicopter tour, but I was going to say it with the caveat that I would recommend taking the helicopter up towards Waipio and Waimanu valleys, which are on the north part of the island. Okay. And I was going to say that mainly because at this point, the helicopters are actually flying rather than over Pu'u'o'o, like the one that you went on, they're actually now flying over a subdivision, over people's homes who are have been displaced for a couple months or trying to get their lives back in order and don't appreciate the constant stream of helicopters. So I would say if you're going to look at the more recent flow, probably better to see that from the road and one of the viewing locations on the road than in a helicopter.
And when you say on the road, is that still the Chain of Craters road?
Actually, I think the best place to see the most recent flow would be from the intersection of Highway 132 and Pohi'iki Road, just east of Pahoa, a little further south from Hilo. In the area around Pahoa, where the most recent flow was, there's a couple things that I would recommend seeing. One is the area of Kalapana, which is where Highway 130 and Highway 137 both end. the literal and figurative end of the road. There's a nice black sand beach that you can see there. You can see the remnants of the eruption that happened, frankly, all the way from the late 1980s through 2017. So Calapan is very nice. There's a market that's there on Wednesday evenings that's mostly local people. And the best description I can say is it's like a luau, but not for tourists. It's people who are actually just singing and dancing because that's what they want to do on Wednesdays. And if you're lucky enough to be there and see it, it's much more authentic than something that you would see at a hotel on the west side. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I'm sure is not in most of the guidebooks, but is one of the best ways for seeing the lava is if you actually go to the dump in the town of Pahoa. In 2014, the flow went right up to the gates and the fence, and you can see how the lava actually went through the chain link fence. And that's kind of that's something you can get right up next to, as opposed to some of the other more damaged areas that are currently inaccessible. And then one other thing in the Pahoa areas, on Sunday mornings, there is a farmer's market called the Maku'u Market, MAKU'U. And that really gives you an idea of a local market. It's for local people. I would say 90% of the people there are local people who go there every Sunday to buy their fruits and vegetables, to sell parts, to buy used DVDs, all the things that you would actually see in a market that's not tourist. So I would much recommend that market over, let's say, the one in Hilo or the one in Kona.
Now, when we're down towards the place where you were talking about the dump, for instance, aren't we also by the Lava Tree State Monument?
Yes, that currently is closed, but that people may be listening to this 10 years from now, 12 years from now, I'm sure it's only a matter of time until the Lava Tree State Monument opens. And lava trees are basically where lava hardened around trees, and the trees then hollowed out after that. And you just have these holes that are all around. And so that's a pretty interesting monument. And that's right near that fork that I was telling you about at 132 and Pulihi Road, which currently has the best view of the volcano that went off earlier this year.
Okay.
Next would be the National Park, which is just east of Pahoa off the main highway, Highway 11. And the National Park just opened again in September of 2018, and it's opening little bit by little bit. One thing to definitely look at in the national park is how much bigger the crater is now versus just a few months ago. It's quadrupled in size because what happened was, as the eruption went off further east, all of the lava that was in the crater hollowed out, dropped hundreds, if not thousands of feet. And when that happened, all of the pressure that was holding up the dirt and the cinder and everything else collapsed and collapsed and collapsed. And there were earthquakes every day, and it just kept falling in on itself. And so the crater is quadruple the size and very deep. And in fact, one of the old roads that went south of the crater has now fallen into the crater. And if you're hiking on the devastation trail, you can get a very good view of that. And the devastation trail is open. You can hike on that. There's a lot of good hiking in the national park. Another thing to see in the national park would be down towards the end of Chain of Craters Road. There's some petroglyphs from long ago. There's also a nice sea arch, the Hole Sea Arch. And then you can just park your car at the end of the road and walk out on the lava flow. And again, that's the lava flow that started in, I think, 1983, that's been going off and on for the past 35 years.
Well, and when we were there, it just happened to be that there was surface flow. And so when we went to the Chain of Craters Road, you could walk about a hike in about a mile at that point and see. Actually, I was stunned by how close they let us stand to lava that was flowing towards us. Basically, we were close enough to touch it. It was, of course, way too hot to touch. It started to rain while we were there, and you just stood a little closer to the lava, which is very, very slowly flowing towards you, and you dried off really quickly. It's 1,500 degrees or something like that. And there were a couple park rangers there trying to make sure that nobody did anything stupid. You won't necessarily have that experience. That's just a timing thing is everything, and you never know quite what's going to be happening. But that's one of the things that makes this just a stunning national park, is it's always changing. In hearing you describe, so that would be the Kilauea crater that is much larger than it was last time I was there.
Correct. Yes. I would say if you are going out there to check to see what active flows are going, if not, you can check out the USGS mm-hmm. website, and they have constant updates on the status of Kilauea. And sometimes it's much closer when there are flows, sometimes much closer to the end of Chain of Craters Road at the National Park.
Right.
And sometimes it's much closer to Kalapapana off of Highway 130. Mm-hmm. And depending on where it is, obviously you would want to minimize the walking that you're doing.
Well, and what we were recommended by our hotel in Hilo was take a flashlight and then go out towards dusk, because that gives you a better chance of seeing it when there is surface flow to see, that is.
Yes, and if you do that, make sure to bring lots of water and to bring a headlamp or a flashlight, because mm-hmm. the footing, as you can imagine, is anything but flat and straight.
Right.
So definitely be careful on where you're walking and what
and
your footing's
follow
like.
Follow the directions of the park rangers, who will tell you where it's safe to go and where it's not
exactly.
safe to go.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember how much my kids enjoyed when we were on the Devastation Trail looking for Pele's tears, little drops of lava, and then the other one that's long strands of lava, something hair.
That's Pele's hair, which
Pele's
is basically
hair. Okay.
Glass particles that are about the diameter of hair, and it's just from the silica hardening. I actually spent most of this week cleaning Pele's hairs off of my roof so that I could start using my water tank again.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, my kids were just stunned that they could walk around this volcano area and find these on the ground. Again, much more interesting when you're finding them on the ground than when you're finding them on your roof.
Yes, for sure.
And the other lava tube there, the Thurston lava tube, is another one that you can go into that's very interesting.
Yes, I believe that one is not open as of today, but certainly I'm sure in the very near future it will be open again. They're slowly but surely opening more and more of the national park over the next month or so.
Yeah, and just a stunning national park. And I don't know of any other national park in the U.S. or possibly in the world that is its equivalent. Because of this being such an active volcanic area, definitely something that is a must-see. I think it's one of the reasons you go to the Big Island.
I would say the next spot is a little further to the southwest from the National Park, again off of Highway 11, down near Pahala and Na'alehu. And there's two things that I would definitely recommend down in that area. And one is a black sand beach that reliably has sea turtles that hang out in a nice little bay there on the black sand beach, coming in to sun themselves before they go back out into the water. It's a nice black sand beach, even if there's no turtles there. But I would say about 80% of the time I visited there, there's been one or more turtles hanging out on the beach. Obviously, give them a fair amount of space. Don't touch them. Don't get too close. Don't alienate them. But
mm-hmm. What? And there is a law in terms of how close you can get to them. I want to say it's 20 feet, but I'm doing that from memory.
Lots of times they do have signs up, but I can't remember off the top of my head what that is.
Yeah.
Obviously, just exercise common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing in that area is right near South Point, which is the southern point of the island and the southernmost part of the United States. There's a hike from there that goes out to a green sand beach, which is from a flow that had a high amount of olivine in it. And so it's this green sand, and it's in a nice crescent moon-shaped bay. And you can hang out there at the green sand beach. There's two ways to do that. You can either walk out, it's about 2¾ miles each way, or there are people, local people that live there that, for I want to say it's about $10 or $20, will drive you from the parking lot area to the beach in 4x4s. So if you don't feel like walking all that way, you can do that. If you feel like maybe driving out and walking back, you could do that. But I would recommend if you're feeling up to it, to at least walk one way, because a lot of the greenest sand I've noticed is actually on the shoreline as you're doing the hike. Hmm. And so if you're taking the 4x4 there and back, you're going to miss the greenest parts of the beach.
Well, and I have to ask, because you're calling out the specific type of rock that was used here. Do you have experience in geology, or is just that everybody who lives on the Big Island is a amateur volcanologist?
Yeah, I would say you just learn a little bit just being there and hearing about what's going on. Everyone becomes an amateur volcanologist and a geologist and a bunch of other ists.
Okay, excellent.
Next, I would kind of turn the corner, and you're heading up towards Kona. But before you get to Kona, there's an area where Kona Coffee comes from, which is an area south of Kona by a little bit. It's around the town of Captain Cook. And there's a couple things to see there all around Captain Cook. One is the place of refuge, which is a historical area where back during the Hawaiian times, if you had been sentenced to death, you could try to run to the place of refuge before you were caught and executed. And if you made it to the place of refuge, you could beg for forgiveness for the local priest. And oftentimes you would be forgiven and you could go on with your life. And at the place of refuge, they have quite a few historical platforms and demonstration areas of canoe making or thatch making or things that really kind of interesting from a historical standpoint to see what it was like back before discovery by Western Europe.
Before you leave there, you're cheating because you're pronouncing this in English, and we're talking about the best named national park in the U.S.
Yes.
Do you want to give a try at the Hawaiian pronunciation, or are you going to make me make a fool of myself?
No, I don't. That's exactly why.
It is something like Pu'u'onoa Ohonaunau is the name of the national park. So a place of refuge is a lot easier to say. But you got to get a picture of yourself with the sign.
They did rename it back in the 70s to the more Hawaiian sound. Well, not the more Hawaiian, the actual Hawaiian sounding
right.
name. But my Hawaiian is not good, unfortunately. And so, yeah, I would make a fool of myself if I tried to pronounce it.
Well, let me do that. Excellent. And then you said the Captain Cook Monument.
Yes, the Captain Cook Monument. So Captain Cook was the first person from Europe to, quote unquote, discover the Big Island. And he was revered by the local people because at the time he showed up and the way that he showed up on these massive boats, people thought he was an actual god and they revered him. But when his boat left the last time that he was there, it ran into some problems and immediately came back to try and get some repair work. And when he came back needing repairs, all of a sudden the people started to wonder whether this was in fact a god, because if he was, why would he need these repairs? And there was some thievery of some nails from the ship. And there was a rowboat that was taken off of Captain Cook's ship by the local people there. And there was a little dispute that escalated, and in that process, Captain Cook was killed. And about 100 years later, the British came back to build a monument to him there in Kealakekua Bay. And you can canoe out to that monument from Kealakekua Bay. That's a nice bay to canoe around. There's quite a few dolphins that are there regularly, and that's really nice views from that area as well.
I feel like I have driven that road, but I don't think we stopped at the Cook Monument.
Well, you can't see the monument's not near the road, so really the only way to get there is to canoe out there. It's at the north end of the bay, and the road is on the east side of the bay.
Got it.
Third thing that I would really recommend in that Captain Cook area is there's a painted church just uphill from the place of refuge. That is worth a view. It's really got some exquisite painting on the inside that's worth a quick look, and you're going to drive right past it anyway, so I think it's definitely worth a stop there. And then next would be Kona, which is the most popular part of the island, the one that gets the most tourists because it has far and away the best weather and the best views on the island. There is a nice little downtown drag called Ali'i Street that has got quite a few hotels, quite a few restaurants. There's an old church there as well. That's a nice place to just walk up and down the street and take in the view, stop here and there to get some food, to get some shave ice, to get a Mai Tai. So I would recommend that. Also, in Kailua Kona, there is a unique opportunity that doesn't exist very many places, if anywhere else on the planet, which is to reliably dive or snorkel at night with manta rays. There's a couple different spots where they put in some lights that attract, I think it's plankton, which then attracts the manta rays. So they'll go and turn on the lights at night. The manta rays will come in, and then the boats full of people will come out, and the snorkelers will be on the top of the water. The divers go all the way down and sit on the bottom of the ocean, and the manta rays basically go around in these big circles from the bottom of the water up to the top, just eating all of the plankton that have been attracted to the lights. And so that's something that, if you're going to the Big Island, is certainly something that's unique to the Big Island, and I would definitely recommend. Now, one thing that you haven't heard me mention much of, which is kind of surprising given that this is a tropical island, is any beaches.
Right.
Because, as we talked about earlier, the ocean would be over 20,000 feet deep, but for the volcanoes. And because of that, the beaches get very deep very quickly, and there's quite a few riptides. And so I really don't recommend going in the water, except for the places where there are quite a few tourists. And the one that I would really recommend if you want to have a white sand beach kind of experience is Hapuna Beach, which is about half an hour north of the Kona Airport near Kauai High. And that area has got a lovely beach, crescent shaped, and the water there is a little shallower and not nearly as dangerous as some of the other places on the island.
Our kids learned to snorkel at the 5 mile beach, at the 5 mile marker, which is the Kumani Beach, I think, perhaps. I'm not sure exactly. It's right by the little church. I remember that. And again, it's kind of a sheltered bay that also had some sea turtles and such, but it was shallow for quite a ways, as you say, which is more rare on this island.
Yeah, I would think if you were up for a beach vacation and just hanging out on the beach, I would probably recommend one of the other Hawaiian islands before the Big Island. The Big Island, I would say, is more for people who want to see a more diverse array of items on their vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of the, in fact, a lot of the resorts that are north of Kona, really it's more going in the pool than the beach even.
So the last part, the part we haven't gotten to yet, is the northern area north of Waimea, kind of that northwest part of the island that sticks out from the circle. And there's a couple things there. One is the town of Hawi, H-A-W-I, which is in the very northwest part of the island. That's a nice little art town, a lot of arts and crafts, a lot of people who are into artwork. It's really kind of a fascinating little town. Right east of Hawi, where the road ends, there's a short hike off of Highway 270 to Pololu Valley, P-O-L-O-L-U, that has just some amazing views of some valleys and canyons looking back towards the southeast. And especially in the evening when the sun is behind you, all the various colors of green are just really spectacular. And then kind of the flip side of that is if you were to go to the town of Honoka'a and then head to Waipio Valley, which is further east from there, you're looking at the same canyons and valleys, but from the opposite end. And that, on a clear day, is probably, if not the very best view on the island, certainly right there. In fact, the first time we went there, it was so clear that we could see all the way to Maui. We could see Haleakala from Waipio Valley. And you can walk down to Waipio Valley, but it is quite a steep road. You're not allowed to drive your rental cars on it. We didn't think of exactly how steep it was until we started walking back up the hill. And at that point, we had no choice but to get all the way back. But we were dragging by the time we got back there.
Well, and one other thing I would say in the Kona area that I want to mention, although not necessarily recommend, there is a third park in the national park system, and that is a national historic park, which is the Koloko Hono Kohau National Historic Park, and that has a hela, an old Hawaiian temple. I would say if you're collecting national parks and you have a national park passport, I would go. Other than that, I'd probably skip it. Not a lot to see there.
Yeah, I have to admit, I've probably driven past that park a million times, and I did not know it was a national park. That looks to be the area around where they have the renewable energy facility, and I never gave any thought to the fact there might have been something right near there that was a national park.
Yeah, National Historic Park, so in the National Park system. And we do collect National Parks, so that's why I've been there.
Now looking on the map and seeing that National Park, that is the area where the manta ray diving is.
Oh,
you
okay.
leave from the pier area that's just south of that National Park and then head a little north, and there's very good snorkeling. That's where the manta ray snorkel and diving is.
Anything else, if we were to go all the way back to Hilo, that we want to conclude?
If you are there for a week or two, especially longer, I would recommend driving the three roads that go across the island. 11 that goes around south, 19 that goes around north, and then the saddle road that goes in between, mm-hmm. which used to be difficult, if not impossible, but now is actually probably the nicest road on the island.
Oh,
it's
really?
All been recently paved in the last 5 to 10 years. Yeah, it's very nice. The one thing to be on the lookout for, though, is don't drive too fast, because there's the native bird called a nene, which looks like a goose or a duck, that is in that area. And oftentimes there'll be either cattle or goats crossing the road, too. So even though the road is flat and there's nothing around, don't get the urge to drive too fast, because there might be something waiting for you in the middle of the road.
Okay, good to know. So we talked about the destinations. You mentioned shave ice. Are there other things we want to eat while we're on the Big Island?
Poke is one. There's okay. a good place in the Kona area called Da Poke Shop, D-A-P-O-K-E, mm-hmm. and that's a very popular place. It's raw fish, but mixed generally with something like mm-hmm. soy or an avocado or spicy type sauce, sesame seeds. There's all sorts of different varieties, but generally it's fresh fish mixed with some sort of a sauce. Another yep. thing is you'll see a lot of places that will sell a plate lunch, which is generally a protein, some sort of pork mm-hmm. or chicken, and then side dishes, generally rice and macaroni salad, which everyone calls mac salad. And there's places all over the island to get plate lunch. One that I really like is actually in Naalehu, near between the green sand and black sand beach. It's the mm-hmm. southernmost restaurant in the United States, and it's called Hanahou, H-A-N-A space H-O-U. And the Big Island is the southernmost of the Hawaiian Islands, and so obviously the southern part of the southernmost island is going to be the southernmost spot of the 50 states.
Any other restaurants you would recommend?
Well, there's restaurants all over the place. I would say if you're in Hilo on a nice afternoon or evening, there's the Hilo Bay Cafe, which is near Coconut Island. Mm-hmm. And because it's on the east part of the bay, it's really the only spot on the eastern part of the island that has what I would call a sunset view, because otherwise the sun's okay. setting behind the mountains. Mm-hmm. But on a clear afternoon evening, the view from Hilo Bay Cafe, you can see both Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea and the sun setting behind them with the bay right in front of you. It's really a kind of a gorgeous view from there.
Cool. Any recommendations on places to stay?
I would really recommend that people look at Airbnbs, because mm-hmm. while there are some of the nice resorts that you mentioned a couple minutes ago that have their own private beaches, I just don't feel if you go to one of those places, you're going to get the sort of vibe that you would get if you were outside of them. They're sort of sheltered into themselves. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend maybe looking in some of the neighborhoods that are more off the beaten path and just looking around for places that look really sort of interesting and maybe much closer to some of the smaller towns like Hawi or like Honoka'a or like Pahoa. Those towns are definitely very interesting, and you'll get a much different idea and much more authentic idea of what the island's about staying in one of those smaller towns than staying in the big resorts in Kona or Hilo. One exception I would say, though, is there is a very nice hotel with great views and a nice restaurant and bar in the Kailoa Kona area called the Royal Kona Resort. Mm-hmm. We've stayed there a couple times. There's a Mai Tai festival once a year that's out there.
Okay.
And they have a covered outdoor bar that's got a view of the ocean. We've seen dolphins playing out in the bay there a couple times, and it's just kind of nice to sit there, enjoy the breeze, and down a couple cocktails.
Excellent. Well, and you mentioned festivals. That leads us into the best time of year to come to the Big Island.
Yeah, so one interesting thing about the Big Island is compared to most tropical places, there's not a distinct wet and dry season like mm-hmm. you would see, let's say, in Indonesia or Thailand or something. And so you can really go at any time of year because the rain is going to be more or less consistent and the temperature doesn't change much between the summer or winter. So what I would recommend is looking for the least expensive times, which in my experience has generally been October, the time between Thanksgiving and mid-December, kind of mm-hmm. after everyone's done their Thanksgiving trip and before they do their Christmas trip, right after New Year's, and then the time between spring break and the end of the school year. So kind of mid-April to early May, all those times are generally a couple $100 less expensive in terms of airfare.
Yeah, we should say that it's really driven more by when are people fleeing the winter or when do they have summer vacations or spring vacations than the Big Island being particularly nicer in one part of the year than the other. But then best days of the year. You mentioned a Mai Tai festival. Other days that we want to be on the island?
I will say there is a big festival in Hilo every year called the Merry Monarch Festival that has a lot of authentic dancing, pageantry, the whole nine yards, that again is something that's extremely popular with the locals and not by any stretch of the imagination for tourists. But mm-hmm. if you happen to be lucky enough to be there when the Merry Monarch Festival is going on, that could give you an authentic experience that you're not going to see at other times of the year.
And is that Mary as an M-E-R-R-Y?
Yes, correct.
Okay. I didn't think there was a monarch of Hawaii named Mary, so I was pretty sure that that's what we were talking about here. Excellent. Anything else that people need to know before they pack their bags and head to the Big Island?
A lot of people get the idea of having a rental car that's a convertible. And maybe mm-hmm. if you're on the west side of Maui, that would be great. I would not recommend that on the Big Island unless you were staying completely on the west side. And even then, if you were to go down to that area near Captain Cook, it can get quite a bit of rain there as well. So I would not recommend a convertible. And in fact, if you can find one that's got rain sensing wipers, I would say that's good because the storms come and go and you mm-hmm. can go from no rain to a downpour and right back again in 45 seconds. So having a newer rental car with some rain-sensing wipers could really save you a lot of headaches because the last thing you need when you're dealing with a car that you are not used to is having to fiddle with the wipers constantly.
Well, and we should say that is true for all of the islands that have some altitude to them. So Maui, the Big Island, Kauai, and Oahu all have a rainier and a drier part of the island. Lanai less so. I think Molokai also does. And the wetter tending to be north and northeast, depending a little bit on the island, and the drier, the leeward part of the island, so the trade winds blowing from northeast to southwest. So the west and south portions of the island being drier. So again, that's why he said if you're on the west part of Maui, then you're in the leeward part of the Maui's rain shadow, and then again, you're in a drier area. So again, depending on which island you're on, the different portions of it have both the wet and the dry side. Excellent. As we get to our wrap-up questions, I think you may have answered this already, but you're standing in the prettiest spot in the Big Island. Where are you standing, and what are you looking at?
Well, like I said, on a clear day, I would say you're at the lookout for Waipio Valley, but I would say the most reliably beautiful spot is actually a spot that I haven't mentioned yet, which is on the old saddle road. So they mm-hmm. realigned the saddle road that goes across the middle of the island maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. But the old part is still a road. It's just not nearly as traveled now. And it's a little south of the town of Waimea, more on the Kona side of the island. And there's a spot about halfway between where the old saddle road and the new saddle road fork, and when the old saddle road hits Highway 190, where if you stop there and get out of the car and look around, you can see five volcanoes all at once just by looking around. You can see Mauna Kea, which is right next to you. Mm-hmm. You can see Mauna Loa. You can see Hualalai, which is about a 9,000-foot mountain that's just above Kona. You can see Kohala, which is the northernmost volcano on the Big Island. And you can also see Haleakala on Maui, which is to the northwest from that spot. So it's kind of an amazing thing to just do a quick 360 and see five different volcanoes of all different shapes and sizes.
When we're on that road, that just reminds me, you're over in the drier part of the island already at that point, and you're in lava flow because, you know, the whole island is built on lava flow. And this lava flow, I want to say, is like 1,000 years old. I mean, it's old lava flow, and yet it doesn't get a lot of water in that part of the island. So you see the lava flow in a lot of areas is sort of unchanged for many years, where back on the wetter side of the island, it doesn't take that long before things start growing up and such. So obviously the newer lava flow is going to be just completely covered with lava. But if you're in that road, for instance, between Volcanoes National Park and Hilo, it's a very, very green area. And so the difference between how long it takes things to sprout depends a lot on how much rain you get. And it's really stunning in these two areas.
Agree.
One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in the Big Island.
A couple months ago, I would have said having a river of lava going through your neighborhood, but thankfully that is not my answer anymore.
I'm not sure that laughter is the appropriate response to that anyway. So
a defeated type laughter, like, hey, you can't do anything about it. But being able to drive wherever you want for whatever weather you want. So, for example, if you're sick and tired of the rain on the east side, you can literally get in your car, drive 2.5 hours and be in the sunshine. If you're tired of 90 degree heat and sunshine in Kona, you can drive 45 minutes up towards Waimea and it'll be 75 degrees. You'll oftentimes see when there's been snow on Mauna Kea, you'll see people who have driven up there in their pickup trucks, filled up the pickup truck with snow and then driven down to the beach and are making snowmen on the beach. I can't think of too many places you could do that.
Excellent. Well, and we should say that this is one of those places, too, that you definitely want to bring your swimsuit, but you may also want to bring a coat. Just depends on what you're going to do while you're there.
Yeah, that reminds me. I mentioned earlier there is the tour that will take you up to Mauna Kea for sunset. Almost all, if not all, of those tour operators do provide parkas for people because they know that most of the tourists have not packed a parka in their suitcase.
It is not something you think about packing to go to Hawaii, we'd have to say.
Yeah.
If you had to summarize the Big Island in three words, what three words would you use?
The first one would be unique in that it has so many different climates and views and vegetation that all in one small area. Second one would be geology. You alluded to that earlier, and kind of being an amateur geologist, but you can really see Earth being made, Earth being destroyed, all in real time. And that's something that you really just kind of seems in slow motion in the rest of the world. And then the third would be vibrant, both in terms of the colors of the vegetation, the culture, the Hawaiian culture, and also the people.
Excellent. Well, our guest again has been Justin Barnes. And Justin has a website at justinandcrystal.com. Do you have any blog posts there or posts on the Big Island you want to recommend for us to read?
I think there's one, if I remember right, on the left-hand side of the page that has a link to a bunch of photos with some descriptions from the Big Island, kind of showing the best and brightest, literally and figuratively, of the island. So I would recommend that.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Justin, for coming on The Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for the Big Island.
Really happy to. Thank you.
In news of the community, don't forget to sign up if you're interested in that trip to South Africa, to Kruger National Park, Botswana, and Victoria Falls in May of 2019. For more information, go to amateurtraveler.com/Africa2019. I heard from Bob about the recent show we did on Western Pennsylvania. Hello, Chris. I've been listening a long time. I think it's about 7 years now. I enjoyed the recent podcast about Western PA, and having recently visited the area in and around Pittsburgh myself, wanted to add something that I believe is relevant. Pennsylvania and Western PA in particular are well known for the historic covered bridges that abound. We used the Washington PA area as our home base on a recent trip. It's about 30 miles or so southwest of the Pittsburgh area. The number of covered bridges very nearby the Washington area is incredible, and there were four different driving routes that can easily be followed that will take a visitor from one covered bridge to the next in succession. We covered just one of those routes one afternoon for just under 2 hours, seeing four different historic covered bridges. For most of your listeners who are not from the Northeast, seeing these bridges is probably a new experience, as it was for us. Bob. Bob, thanks. I did not know that, and I've been to Washington, PA for a wedding many years back, had no idea about the covered bridges, which shows you why we have the best listening audience out there. With that, I'm going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. If you want to sponsor the show, also send an email to that address, or you can leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more